Okay, thank you very much to Barbara. I don't know if she's out there. I did perhaps a lot of work and emails and editing, but the pump and heart of the whole enterprise that we have here is due to Barbara, and I think I want to thank you specifically for allowing all of this, and to the committee for allowing me to speak to the rest of the committee. I have to say that I deeply in debt to Kathleen for many reasons. I actually it's not just the discussions, the mathematics. It was the stimuli. It was the whole experiences that I had at the time, on which I have to say that I started to do something on semiconductor equations, aerodynamics models, and Luis suggested me you should talk to Kathleen about it, and I went to Quran. I don't know if we had email at the time or not, and I visited you, and I asked her if I could write an NSF proposal to work with her. It was the first year they opened the NSF to postdoctoral fellowships to permanent residents, and I cannot tell you my excitement when I got in the email this thick envelope, that because if it is thick, it's because there is a lot of stuff there, and somebody asked me at the time, why would you go to New York if there is great mathematics in Princeton? And I said, in Princeton, I might end up being a star, and I think I can become a mathematician if I go to New York. So I'm very indebted to only Kathleen, but all the current community that embraced me from day one, made me an associate professor, so I'm very grateful. And as I said, it was much more than a wide opening experience. It's really a narrow opening experience. And so we discussed a lot of problems on transonic flow. We didn't get to the point that we wanted or we had hope at the time, but I still have, you know, this hope that, who knows, one day it will get all put down together in a nice way. And Kichani, certainly in the enterprise, and Costa will get it done. But that is, it put me also in a path of the Boltzmann equation. At the time, I was interested in the Boltzmann equation for semiconductor. I got involved with people in the Boltzmann equation, Carlo Cerchignani, Dave Levermore. We started to work, and later on with Bobby Lev, Cedric Villani. I have Vlad Panferov. Was a postdoc, a student that actually graduated with Arkrid in Sweden, and we started to do some work, which I'm about 6 years ago, and it's a sequence of papers, and I put them compressed into an overview that you can see. And more recently, I worked with Ricardo Alonso, who's a student of mine, graduated last year, this summer, and he is spending a year at Brand. So what is the Boltzmann equation? In fact, Young was introduced a while ago, so I go very fast on this slide, okay? So you have a rough idea of what is in there. I saw yesterday people using, oh, here it is. So in the Boltzmann equation, indeed, is, I write it differently, what Young wrote, it's just a different notation. Here what you have is, I choose to say F and F star, and it's the evaluation of F on B and F star on B on this side, and F on B and F on B star, and here is in the stamps, if I put the prime on the left, it's pre-collisional velocities. If you see the prime on the right, it's post-collisional velocities. And the interaction can be elastic if they conserve the relative velocity, if relative velocity is a specular reflection. But if it's inelastic, if, for instance, you lose a portion of mass of the relative velocity in the direction of the impact velocity, and that actually is reflected in the fact that the angles would be small. And we have been studying these problems, and we go to the details on what is the difference of one and the other, although most of the lecture is going to be on issues of the elastic equation. So what are the main assumptions for the equation? Here you have the free transport operator. So in both cases, elastic or inelastic collisions, what you have is that the collisional integral is the difference of two positive operators, one on which it has the gain of probability rate of probability in the direction of the precollisional velocity p, and here is the rate of loss of probability due to the collision in the direction of p. And the answer is that in order to be bilinear, this was all discussed a minute ago, you have to have sort of molecular Kirch hypothesis, and that is usually valid if the gas is sufficiently rarefied that the velocities are going to be uncorrelated before the interaction, and that is why that's actually what presets the time irreversibility that you observe for the Boltzmann equation. And so if you write them in a strong form, and this is very important when you do inelastic collisions and you can trip, this inelasticity may be a constant parameter or may be actually a function that depends on the relative or the impact velocity, which is on this dot product. Eta is this direction here, it's the direction that contains the two centers at the time of the interaction. And this Jacobian is actually, the absolute value of the Jacobian is 1 in the case of elastic theory, but not necessarily 1 in the inelastic. Sorry? Oh, yes. I always get that question. Maybe I should take it out of here because it would be misleading. But essentially, it's a very good question. It comes really when you do inelastic theory, all right? Because this function here, you can put anything here, and the notation, I pick it up from some way the engineers or physicists have written for the inelastic collision. It basically says you can put any function here that depends macroscopically on the solution. So I can put energy, density, could depend on x and time. It's something that, and it's called the statistical correlation function. So if you want to write it still as a scalar equation in velocity space, right, you have to account for something. That's the way they would do it. Okay, and so in the community, for example, we have done studies putting here the kinetic energy, or sometimes they put some scalings for the density as well in the inelastic community. If you do this for the elastic theory, it should be 1. Okay. Okay, so a little bit further, I'm going to actually mention a few things that were actually the motivation of this sharp estimate. And somehow it may illustrate what are the issues. And what I'm going to be talking about now is, in view of Youngblood's lecture, is really not the boundary value problem, neither the space inhomogeneous problem. I'm going to take you back to issues that are still very significant in the space inhomogeneous setting when you really don't have any special thing. And so in order to do that, I really want to focus a lot on the collisional integral, because most of the information here really comes from understanding and doing surgery in the collisional expression. And so in view of that, let me just say that also we can consider things that appear in the energy dissipative setting, which is, for instance, if you take inelastic collisions, now this beta measuring the inelasticity, beta is 1 plus the E you saw before, E is the restitution coefficient that could be a function of the impact velocity, and so basically what that makes is that if you write the interaction law in a relative in center of mass and relative velocity, you can do it very nicely if you write the Boltzmann equation in a weak formulation. Okay, and in fact, this is the way Maxwell wrote it himself. But he did it for what it would be, you know, not discussing very much this kernel. But he writes really what we call nowadays Boltzmann equation. Maxwell writes it in this this setting. And it's actually a very handy setting to do. And all the estimates come from here, essentially, because basically what it does, it transfers the exchange of collisions to the test function, And so, in particular, for instance, the expression that you see here doesn't depend on the elasticity any longer. The inelasticity or elasticity only comes through the exchange of interaction. And so if you want to study inelastic collisions, you have to carefully, you know, trace down all your algebra of the collisional integral now on this particular exchange of interactions, which actually they you can trace them as a sort of perturbation of elastic theory. And you can, it's much easier to see it in many ways. So that's the first observation. This term here is the collision kernel. That is something that is going to be very relevant for my lecture. Okay, because many of the things I'm going to say, the sharpness of estimates and how well we can do, depends on the collision kernel. And so because of that, I'm going to focus a little bit more. The collision kernel is usually split as a function of the absolute value of the relative velocity. This is the way Grad writes it in his paper 58, and he carefully describes what are these collisional kernels in three dimensions, although many of the things now we can extend them to higher dimensions. And so here, here is the cosine of the scattering angle, which is indeed taken as the dot product of the relative velocity with the scattering angle. And the scattering angle in the elastic case should be, and in elastic as well, the direction of the outgoing relative velocity, of the post-collisional relative velocity. And that's very important to trace it down. And so the Jacobian of the transformation in this case, actually, sorry, I should not have it here because it's gone. I use it to make the change of coordinates. But what is important is that the relative velocity, the new outgoing relative velocity, if you have inelasticity, you can write it again as a perturbation of the direction of the post-collisional elastic relative velocity times this deviation due to inelasticity. And you can really trace it down very carefully. So how about then the collision kernels, or the differential cross sections as they are called, which are the functions of the angle? Well, these functions usually come, are described, my understanding is the best description up to date is, at least from the mathematics community, for the Boltzmann equation. The elastic Boltzmann equation comes from Grad, or we still use Grad as the benchmark for this particular structure. And so, as I said, the collision kernel is a product of these two functions. This exponent gamma that appears here, we call them, if gamma is larger than 1, if gamma is between 0 and 1, are called variable Hart potentials. If gamma is 1, it's a Hart sphere. If gamma is 0, it's maximum molecules. If gamma is less than 1 and cannot be less than minus n is called a soft potential. And what that gamma comes from, well, is here. Oh, I guess it's losing. Okay. The gamma is here. It depends on this parameter S, which is modeled by the strength of intramolecular potential. And this is the Grad calculation. And so, for instance, you get that if that strength is S, if that power law is 5, then you get maximal molecules. If S is infinite, you get Hart spheres. And Coulombic potentials would correspond to gamma minus 3. Okay? And so what is the Grad cutoff? And so in particular, he writes the form of this differential cross-section, which is how much collisions you would have with respect to the scattering angle. The scattering angle is the angle that is doing the incoming relative velocity with the outgoing. So we say, for example, glancing collisions is where they're almost aligned, all right? And head-on collisions is when they would be opposite. And then he said it should be a function of a power law of the intramolecular potentials, and he models exactly that that way. And basically, what we do know is that in three dimensions, for instance, if you want to do variable car of soft potentials, you would have integrability of that function up to the exponent gamma minus 2. And that is actually important for the things I'm going to say, because all what I want to focus today is on the answer that this function is integrable. Okay? And there is a lot of work that has not been described. So I'm not going to make any other assumption on that angle besides being integral. It could be actually a degenerate for theta equal to zero, but still integrable. And that is okay for this eta, for instance, 2 over s minus 2. Or gamma equals 2, and you calculate it. So the properties of the collision and integral, again, Jan expressed them before. I go very quick on them. And if you write them in weak form, you can test on the constant functions and on linear functions, and that gives you that the collisional integral would conserve mass and momentum. And if you test on this particular quadratic function, you conserve energy. And but if you do the if you do inelastic collisions, you would lose the energy. I will go back to that slide. In addition, they have, if you have elastic interactions, that's very important, is the H theorem, is the decay of the S log F or the H function, as it's called. And that actually expresses the time irreversibility and at the same time in stability. It was this answer that you said, that the molecular chaos indicates that the correlation occurs before the interaction, and that's how you choose the sign in the collisional integral. And so so there are two consequences of that. One is the Boltzmann theorem that says that the only term that can nullify this integral has to be a polynomial, a quadratic polynomial of this form for which f is integral, and that's how the Gaussian comes up. And because of the conservation properties in the space and homogeneity, the three quantities that characterize, or the n plus two quantities that characterize the Gaussian, are picked up by the initial state. And that also gives time irreversibility in this sense, that the stability estimate that you get, that the L12 norm, so the solution of the problem converges to the Gaussian. This is in space and homogeneous. For the space homogeneous, you would have to enter boundary conditions, and that actually might be lost depending on the boundary conditions, but you can do it with periodics. And so these three parameters are picked up by the initial state, and that allows you to do the hydrodynamic limits if you are close to Gaussian. Okay? So and all of this is part of an answer that a lot of results have been coming up, and lately is, okay, how good is the solution of the equation, even in the space homogeneous state? I mean, how well can you do? And by the way, I don't know if it was said before, but this is well established, that if you assume that the solution is a Gaussian only and changes in space and time only in its moments, then you pick up the Euler equations with some constitutive relations, and then hydrodynamic limits can be derived from small perturbations of Gaussians, and there are many experts in this audience about for me to say anything else about it. Okay. Yeah. And okay, in an elastic case, you do lose actually the conservation of energy. You gain an energy dissipation estimate. So you do not have the F log F decay, but you have in exchange something else that gives you global in time estimate. And this is how we have been using a lot in these cases. And the interesting thing is that you still have the time irreversibility, because you get the right sign in the estimate. And again, this is inherited by the way you write the gain operator in the precollisional velocity. Okay, so let me skip that. So so this is, maybe some of you have seen this slide. I've been using it heavily because it expresses what are the problems that are somehow have been solved in the last 4 or 5 years, in a sense. And there was one particular that was open. Okay, so suppose that you have now the space homogeneous equation, so there's no x dependence any longer. So focus solely on the collisional integral. And an external force term. That external force term can be a diffusion, like for instance, if you have inelastic collisions with a random kick, can be a shear flow transformation, can be a subsimilar transformation. You may wonder, can you get subsimilar solutions and try to see if there is a scaling that gets you to the convergence of subsimilar solutions. And here you could have the elastic or inelastic case. And so we call a non-equilibrium a stationary state, or a stable, well, not stable is a different thing, stationary state. If my solution, my steady state solution, so whatever nullifies the right-hand side, right, I call a stationary solution M sub gamma, right? And I put some gamma. Gamma is the strength of collision frequency, because it really will depend on that parameter. If I this integral is actually bounded, okay? M is the equilibrium that I have to find out. If you do elastic theory, M is a Gaussian. And that's my table. But if you do inelastic theory, and you take the inelastic Boltzmann plus diffusion, M is actually the exponential to the gamma plus 2 over 2. So you do Hartzius, it's 3/2. You do maximum molecules, it's 1/2. Minus 1, sorry. It's the stationary solution. For the right, it's something that nullifies the right-hand side.
Nullifies or satisfies?
That satisfies the right, it's in the kernel of the right-hand side, that's what I meant, okay. All right? So stationary, okay? And then I call that, I have a stationary state that is non-equilibrium, I don't know if it is stable or not, right? If this quantity is in L1. So I cannot say that F infinite, perhaps, because it is in Boltzmann, you don't have so many local estimates yet. Okay? Even the H theory is in L1, 2. All right? So what I'm saying is, I'm going to say, for instance, that the non-equilibrium, so in the stationary case, we call it a statistical equilibrium, right? But in the all other cases, I get here distributions that are not going to have the weight of Gaussians, nevertheless are stationary states. And these are called non-statistical equilibrium stationary states. And sometimes they're called NES. All right? So you would expect that the stationary state for this problem is not going to be a Gaussian if you do, for instance, inelastic theory plus distance. Or if you do, for instance, elastic theory, and this is actually quite remarkable because you can do elastic theory, right? And for Maxwell molecules, and study sub-similar solutions, okay, for the Maxwell molecules plus a linear term set. In that case, you can obtain stationary states, sub-similar states, which decay with power-like states. And in fact, in that case, you can even prove they are stable. So there is a whole class of states that you should expect coming from Boltzmann equation in how you balance the energy dissipation and the external forces. Okay? That's basically what I'm trying to... Okay?
If you have inelastic theory, inelastic collision, but not Boltzmann...
Here, the Gaussian.
Inelastic, I'm not thinking
about. Inelastic and not forcing. Okay, what happens is, the stationary state would be it has only been proven for Maxwell molecules, but it's a Dirac delta. Because it's like the probability distribution function uses energy, so the variance is decaying uniformly in time, and so it goes to the Dirac delta. Right? I mean, the interesting case is, do you pick up something different? In fact, in elastic case, Gaussians, in elastic Maxwell molecules, gamma equals to zero, in elastic Maxwell molecules, subsimilar solutions pick up a power tail. But in elastic collisions with variable Hart potentials, even Hart spheres, subsimilar solutions pick an exponential tail, which is not a Gaussian. And actually, it's quite remarkable, because this says all moments are bounded. But here, only a finite number of moments are bounded. So somehow, the gamma parameter, so the strength of intramolecular potentials, here, the energy dissipation. You get different things. All right? Okay. So what was the problem we started to work out that take us to this, to what I want to talk today? It's actually in the search of trying to get point-wise bounds to this state. Right, we have this L infinite, L1 weighted estimate, right, that we knew about it. I'll explain it in a minute. But it says, can we actually get something more, like point-wise bounds? And then we realized, as we were studying the problem, that the problem was actually open even for the classical Boltzmann equations in elastic theory, which basically says, if you start with the initial state that is controlled at infinite by Gaussian tails, can you actually secure, you know, the H theorem says, because you start with anything of that kind, right? The H theorem says that you convert to a Gaussian in L1, 2. Okay? So that is So it will converge to the Gaussian. So you know that this will go to the Gaussian in L1, so in two moments, right? In the realm of 2 moments, and then you get this Gaussian, right? But the question is, if you start with this Gaussian decay, can you secure that this evolution always keeps Gaussian states? Right? And the answer had been answered to that question had been actually addressed by Bember in a paper of 98 that is true from below. But it was open from above. Okay? Because in principle, you could think that you go to this, you know, you have the conversion to the Gaussian wobbling about the Gaussian phase. Right? And so how can you get that? And in fact, this is one of the consequences that we prove of, and that requires to make a lot of sharp bounds. And in the search of sharp bounds, we found a lot of other new way of controlling bounds of the collisional integrals. And this is what I want to show you. Okay? That requires, as I said, to make the proof of this statement. But, you know, we try to do it for inelastic collisions because we have, and I will skip that today, we have a lot of information, the bound from below. But we still are stuck with the bound from above. And the fact that we can do it for Gaussians, I mean, the Gaussian is magic, has a lot of a structure that other distributions do not have. And in any case, let me just say that we have need the Sharpe-Popner lemma. This is one of the Sharpe estimates. Then I will show you how we do summability, and then I will show you how comparison principles help us, and then I will show you the extensions of some other estimates. So what was done in this line of thought? So the first work actually comes from the existence and uniqueness of the Cauchy problem and estimate. And so the first observation is the existence theory and how well you can do it was with initial state in L1, and actually Arkady does it even in L infinite. They can show that this is existent and uniqueness in a class of energy conservative solutions. Kahneman and actually Arkady later on addressed the issue of propagation of behavior. Okay, and so the first observation, Kahneman says, if I have certain moments bounded, then I can propagate them to certain extent with certainness. And then there was a breakthrough paper, I mean, quite a lot of time until Devillet proved in 93 something which is quite remarkable, and it's making a use of an ODE for moments, which I will bring up to your attention later on, to get this sharp estimate. And what he proves is, he says, if I have a few moments bounded initially, then I can propagate all moments for all time. So I can create all the moments. Okay? And for that, he needs to use it for hard spheres. And then there was some work of Kahneman, and then Ada Pulvirenti and Bember in 97 show the control from below. And that was the state of the art until there was an interesting work of Bobilev. It was quite independent. It was at the same time, and I don't think they quote much, the work of Bember, that he proved the following statement, which is very strong in a sense. He says, it's what I would call the propagation of global infirm Maxwellian weighted estimates in L1. And this is what I called this at the beginning in the chart. In that chart. So here what he proves is the following. If you actually start with an initial state that has that property propagates uniformly in time, in L1. Okay? And then he says what one needs to do is a very sharp estimate on the control of the collisional integral. And I will show you that in the next slide. And so he did it in 3 dimensions, this result. This is really starting to fail. and then what we did is we extended it to n dimensions and variable hard potentials. Okay, so the issue of the differential cross section came into the game. In 3 dimensions, this angular function that Grab describes is 3 for hard spheres. But if you do in 3 dimensions, low variable hard potentials, it will not be 3. And so you have to deal with it. The other thing we were able to obtain, and this is in the work with Panferov and Villani, is that there is, now that you know what your equilibrium is going to be, okay, Or let me put it another way. If you know what is the weight function you need to put to get control in the L1 norm uniformly in time, then you can get this sort of compactness estimate that says the L infinite norm of the collisional integral evaluated in exactly that form. Okay? So you evaluate sort of fixing the equilibrium or the Gaussian function here, and you put the F, that in L infinite is controlled by the L1 norm that you know this is a uniform bound. So that gives me a uniform bound of Q plus F, H, and H. And then what we need to do is to use a comparison argument, right? Which is actually, it was a Tartar-Crandall lemma for comparing transport equations that are contractive and L1 conservative would make it. Okay? And that gives you then the propagation of uniformly in time of the upper Gaussian bound, okay, for large velocity. So we get the control of, in fact, it's for in all time, because you can always fit a large Gaussian from above and below, and so the problem was the tail. Then we did the extension of the propagations to any derivative, and in fact, this property propagates. We use the fact that in 04, Villani and Mohawk have proved that actually the space homogeneous equations for variable hot potentials was C-infinite. And then what we can do is to extend the estimates to all derivatives. So if you start with an initial state, and each derivative that decay Gaussian like, point-wise, that property is preserved. Okay? I have to say that recently there is a paper of Mohawk that proves that we are actually doing an extension to that, is that even if you start with L12, we know by the Bember work that you could go, or L13, that you could have all moments bounded. But actually, we can prove that we create exponential bounds. They're not going to be Gaussian. It's very technical, but it's much more than bounded moments. It's moments with decay. Okay. So what is then what we have to show here? So the idea is the following. I have to show this is the L1 weighted estimate with this exponential weight, right? Even we did it for the non-elastic case where there will be all these different weights. So how do you get the control of that? Well, it's simply the observation, and this is in the paper of Bobillet for 97, that if you really want to control this quantity, you expand that exponential, right? And that actually you can write as a power shear expansion. So if I could prove the convergence of this power series, I have then that I have the summability of this, the summability of this series give me then a bound for this particular integral. All right? And so the question is, can you make this series summable? What does it take? Okay, well, you have to study the radius of convergence for a series whose coefficients are given by moments over factorial. Okay? And in fact, in the paper in 94 with Bobillet and Panferov, we show that this is doable for a stationary state, for diffusion, for pure diffusion at thermal bath, bath collisions, and a thermal bath restriction, and self-similar solutions, and actually also shear flow. But, okay, let me go back to elastic theory, because this is what I really, or at least the estimate. I want to show what is sharp here. What is what makes it, allows it to do it? This is what I want to focus a minute on. And what is sharp here is the following, okay? And it was the observation that actually this is done in our paper of 04, although Bobillet wrote something in 97, because when he writes this lemma, which is, what you need is to take moments of the collisional integral, or to look at the collisional integral when you're going to test with functions that are convex and non-decreasing, okay? With the functions which are convex, have some convexity property. And so when you write this in a weak form, then you have, this is actually the Maxwell form of the collisional integral. You can split it as functions, you know, as part of the test function, and you have that. Then you separate the state velocity, and you have an integration here that is only angular. And what I care is about the A plus. And so this angular integration is actually the one that needs to be carefully estimated. In fact, this is in the work of Dedil. I mean, we all struggle with that calculation. And it turns out it was done point-wise, but you can actually do it in average. And this is, we'll call it an angular averaging lemma. I mean, we came up with this name, okay? It doesn't have anything to do with the other averaging lemma. But the property is the following, that when you average the test functions in the post-collisional velocity multiplied by the B function, and you only assume that the B function is like this grad kind of form, integrable, but with some other regularity, here, actually, I only need integrability. Then I have this particular form or inequality that is going to be the test function acting on the energy, on the local energy, multiplied by this parameter, mu, okay? And mu is a parameter that depends on the scattering angle, which is the integration variable now parameterized as a sine and cosine on the sphere, okay? And so that allows us to do the following. If the angular function is such that its symmetric part is non-decreasing, and this is a typical answer on angular functions, then you can control exactly the following estimate. If you test on functions x to the p, because it's what gives you moments, then you get something which decays like this polynomial to the p times something which is of the order of the p to a positive power, and that positive power depends on the function gamma, on the exponential form of the function gamma. Now you go and check the forms of the grad functions for variable hard potentials, and it turns out on soft potentials you can go all the way up to -2, and so even you don't need to have B as a function of the angle bounded. Okay. But you need that integrability. So that is very important, because all of this, and the way you do this calculation depends on the beta function. It's a very powerful calculation, but it pulls up something which is of the order of 1 over p to a positive exponent when you take moments of the mean free path. Yeah. Okay. So let me show you this very quick. Give me a couple of minutes. I will. So I will skip a part. But here what you do is you take the moments of the equation, and you carefully have to estimate and rewrite the equation, and it turns out that you look at moments, right? Here's what I would tell you, how you take the moments. You rewrite it using the loss and the gain part. It's like taking a portion of the loss proportional to this exponent that appear in the gain part because of the sharp estimate. And then you look at this quantity. Remember, I have to look at the summability of a series that have this form. So I look at this quantity. And then that quantity satisfies an ODE system of that type, which is pretty much the ODE system which you get for the calculation of creation of moments. I mean, it's not quite the same, but it's something that is controllable. And then it shows, you can show with some basic hypotheses, and that's exactly the way we do it for all the differentiations, for all the derivatives. You can show that that quantity grows geometrically in P. It satisfies that infinite system. Set of ODEs. So with that, then we can compute we can compute the pointwise upper bound by doing a comparison principle. This is a standard, as I said, comparison principle for multilinear symmetric conservative L1 contracted form. So that is always there. It works also for a space inhomogeneous. Then you have to find a good barrier. It turns out that good barrier is the Gaussian. Because indeed I can, and then if I have a barrier, I can compare. This is very standard for the PDE community. And then I can actually show that that barrier is going to be the Gaussian, because I can prove this estimate. Okay? And it's exactly this estimate says my barrier function being the Gaussian is okay. And so once I have that estimate, that estimate is proven by the Kalman integral. And again, this is very technical. And let me skip this slide, because in the circle getting that estimate, okay, so here is how you would get it, we were able to come up, and this is something I think it's very nice. It was a work of Ricardo Alonso with a graduating student in harmonic analysis. In fact, about 4 or 5 months ago, they started to go very carefully into the, again, dissecting the collisional integral. And it turns out that you can actually write it with a very nice new representation that we have not found in the literature, right? Which here is an operator which comes out, it was inspired in the way you look at the operator in Fourier space when you do Maxwell molecules. This was introduced by Bobby Leff, and this is a way to, you know, the theory of generating functions when you can do the Fourier transform probability. And then we were able now, I mean, they actually set up the work to get a sort of Young's inequality for the operator P that comes up with a very sharp form of the calculation of the constant, which really depends on the angular function and on the fact that the angular function is integrable. And it's extended to inelastic collisions. And if the inelastic parameter is constant, you get a sharp, actually, constant from that calculation. And that allows you to come up with actually the equivalent or extensions of the Young's inequality for variable hard potentials. And variable hard potentials is lambda between 1 and 0. And I would say that the propagation of pointwise bounds is for variable hard potentials. There is a technical aspect on this ODE that you cannot bypass. I mean, I cannot go through the details. But certainly, this can be extended to all the spaces, which now, for instance, allows you to revisit the spatial homogeneous estimates and to obtain regularity in a space. Like, for instance, the work of Boudin and de Billet. The difference is that we can do it for integrable Bs, okay? And also for soft potentials. What we have is a sort of Hardy-Littlewood-Sobolev inequality, and which actually it doesn't allow us yet. We don't know how to get all the way to L1. That would be somehow important because for Boltzmann, L1 is the propagation quantity naturally. But we are in the process of working out. But the interesting thing is that it was all inspired by getting this sharp form of the Posnet lemma. And so comments is that tail controls in the space inhomogeneous techniques have not been extended. Maybe it can lead to a local control in a space and global in velocity. I don't know, but that could be something that it should be explored. The use of the Young and Hardy-Littlewood-Sobolev type of inequalities may allow to revisit or extend the existence regularity results of the space inhomogeneous for small data. That I think it's quite doable in some cases. And then the other part is the need to revisit the hydrodynamic limits for energy dissipative phenomena. So I'm not quite sure how the commutation of closures works. And thank you very much for that.